allow yourself to change in a way that's a win-win, good for you and good for the people around you. And see it as a challenge and an opportunity and an adventure. And if we can look at life as an adventure that we can work with, then it's a win-win for everyone.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is brilliant and amazing. Her name is Dr. Sharon Livingston. She is a best-selling author, speaker, and thought leader in the fields of career coaching and qualitative market research. She has worked with dozens of Fortune 100 companies while interviewing more than 64,000 people. It's a lot of people in the last 30 years. Articles either about or by Dr. Livingston have appeared in Forbes, Psychology Today, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Daily News, The Wall Street Journal, Newsday, New York Post, Business Week, Ad Week. My goodness, I could go on and on. There is so much to talk about. Dr. Sharon, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you. I'm really, really happy to be here. And I've been looking forward to talking to you. So this is great.
So we are excited as well. And I know we've got a brand new book to talk about too, but you've been a luminary in your field for a long time now. Take us back, jump us into the Dr. Sharon time machine and tell us what puts you on the journey you're on today.
So I started out, you know, working on my education. And while I was doing that, I would work at night doing interviews for marketing research. I got a job, a local job, on the phone interviewing people. And it turned out that I was making money doing that. And I was promoted in the little company I was working with. And then there was an opportunity to work for a large corporation. I went there and I couldn't work on my PhD, on my dissertation. So I left and my boss there said, "Don't worry, I'll give you focus groups." So that's how it started. I started doing focus groups. And you have two sets of, or three sets of power dynamics happening there. You've got what's going on in the front room. I've got eight people sitting there and they've got all their personalities and whatever, getting them to work cooperatively within 2 hours, which is something, if you're running a therapy group, takes maybe 6 weeks to, you know, get them on board. So I only had them for an hour. I had to build that. Meanwhile, I've got all these observers in the back room who have their own agendas. And so I was beginning to learn about where the power was and how different people interacted. And then over the last number of years, as you well know, the whole idea of power in the workplace has shifted. It used to be you'd get a job, you go to someplace like Kodak, for example, and it was like a marriage. And you were adopted into the family as someone that was taken care of by the management. And all of a sudden that changed. All of a sudden, like in the 80s, I think, was when we started getting all these people, you know, from other countries who could do the work for very inexpensive. And they started laying people off from large companies. And then instead of it being a good thing that you were someplace for a long time, it became a disadvantage. And so what people had to do was reset their thinking about how to grow in their careers. And it worked a lot better if they didn't get pigeonholed into a position, which was more likely if you stayed in the same place. I can tell you stories about it from clients and what they experienced. And particularly now, like since COVID-19 and then, you know, with all the stuff going on in the country now, that it was a ripe time to help people rethink their careers and how they navigated the world today. So in a nutshell, that's what happened.
It's interesting, you know, as you were describing being in this room, these focus groups, having 2 hours to get something accomplished that maybe takes, you know, a month and a half in group therapy. And you're a psychologist, so you know that as well as anybody. I couldn't help but think of Congress. But it's interesting because what you're talking about applies, you know, being able to read the power dynamics of a room, understand how that works, applies not only to businesses if we own them, or our own career, if we are, you know, climbing a ladder or looking to find that great job. I think it applies, you know, to one's home life as well, right? Trying to get, you know, parents and children all on the same page, you know. So there's a lot of places where I see this apply. Unless I misunderstood you, you said something very interesting to me, Dr. Sharon. You had said that the power dynamics have shifted in the last couple of years. So I know you explained why, you know, things have shifted since the 80s, right? That, you know, foreign nationals started coming over. They could do jobs cheaper. That made, you know, people who had worked at companies for long amounts of time expendable. Like, I get all that. What has shifted the power dynamics in the workplace over the last couple of years?
So I would say a little bit more than couple to me means two. And this has been going on for longer than that. But it's the idea that it's not longevity that makes a difference, it's who you know. It's all about relationships. And so I don't know about you, but what I was taught by my parents was nose to the grindstone, do what you're supposed to do, do it excellently, always improve, admit your mistakes, get better and better and better. But that doesn't work anymore. It's not about how well you do your job, it's about how you influence people around you. So that may be peers, but it's more likely to be other people who know someone and can refer you. So it's much more about being referred to get promoted than it is about your performance or your education.
So why do you think that changed? Because I think, you know, when we talk about nepotism or, you know, having a valuable network that you could leverage, that's not new. But the idea that that network or one's ability to influence your superiors or your coworkers has more to do than the degree of talent that you possess, that's fascinating to me. So why that has that shifted based on the research you've done and the people you've interacted with?
I think that the people that you work with and the people you report to, they need to have an advocate and someone who can help them do their job better. And so if you can be, you know, watching the dynamics in your place where you work and figuring out who is the one who has more power and helping them gain even more with your knowledge, with your observations, and not to backstab anyone, I don't mean anything like that, but to provide opportunities for them to look good to their management and, you know, not necessarily go through the channels, but maybe it's at lunch, maybe it's at the, you know, the water cooler, maybe it's you're in a similar group or something, but it's making those connections, people, person to person, rather than hierarchy. And I think that's what's happened. And also, I mean, we've seen it get much more important since COVID-19. A lot of people aren't going to the office. They're working from home. I mean, I used to run focus groups and I'd be in city to city to city, country to country. And now 90% of the work I do is on the computer at home in my slippers. Right. No one sees my feet. So it makes it much more possible to have interactions with whomever I want to have them with. And so I think that's a big difference.
And I think you're right. Probably, you know, the shift out of the office into this hybridized workplace or even fully remote workplace has shifted a lot of things because the interactions with people have changed, right? It used to be that people would, what would they do? They'd hang around the water cooler and they'd talk and build a camaraderie. Now you might have people working all over the country in their different roles. And if there are meetings to get things done, not meetings to gossip and be friendly. And so even how people build relationships in the corporate world has radically shifted. So I think your book is very timely, ironically called Power Dynamics, because that's what we've been talking about, right? So I'm curious, why did you decide to write that book now, right? These changes have been going on for a little while, but why did you feel, Dr. Sharon, like this had to come out right now?
You know, it's interesting. One of my clients is a brilliant man with a PhD, and he was brought into an environment about 6 years ago, and he was brought in to do something with social unrest, and his PhD was about managing conflict, in social situations. And so there was, I don't remember what the position was exactly, but he was hired for that position, and then they didn't have that position. So they gave him some other work, and he did that work. It was not his training, it was something they gave him. And he's from another country. And so part of that culture where he comes from is to be respectful, to be obedient, not to make waves. To support your boss in every way possible. And he was like too polite, too nice. And so the last thing that happened was for about 6 months, they gave him a job where he was doing really crazy work. He'd have to be on the phone with older people who had insurance and find out what they were doing, how what they were doing, what they were doing with their insurance, what they were doing with their health. I mean, it's the kind of job that people make $20 an hour for, tops, $16 an hour. And here's this very well-trained person doing it, and he got fired. I mean, he was more qualified than his boss, and he really didn't know how to work the system, for lack of a better term, and use his power. I mean, this is a brilliant guy. Got great credentials. He did great work in his dissertation. And there he is. And he was out of work for 6 months.
So that's an interesting story, right? A PhD, a brilliant PhD who's doing work well below his pay grade. What are the lessons to take from that for the listeners?
So one of them is that you need to have relationships. You need to build relationships. They probably are not about reporting order. They're about who makes the decisions, who, really helps the company to grow. How can you help them to grow? And it's about helping everyone. If you're in a meeting, rather than trying to be the star of the meeting by talking or talking too much, listening and waiting for the right moment, maybe you're the second or third or fourth person to talk with talking, slowly. Talking deliberately, sitting up straight in your chair, having the right posture, and slowly giving a short input that's meaningful. And then all of a sudden, you become the person in the room that they're listening to. So it's learning how to have an impact, learning how to at least show confidence, even as you're learning to have confidence. And I think that's what's important. I think that's what he needed to do, and that he's been working on. And so, particularly at this time when the job market is so horrible, I mean, that is a big part of why I wrote it also. I mean, this kids coming out of college, they don't get jobs. So, they need to know how to present themselves in a way that they will be recognized.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. You said a couple of things that intrigued me, and you talked about this gentleman who is the PhD, I'm presuming an older gentleman, all right, probably not a millennial.
38.
Okay, so younger than I thought. But what I'm hearing from you are things that kind of line up with what we've seen generationally with respect to shifts in the workplace. I think Bob Berg was really the first luminary to bring light to this, that corporations should be about helping people, having a mission, right? Bob Berg was one of the original guests on my show many, many years ago. And what I really like about him and his book, The Go-Giver, and his philosophy is that he was very much ahead of the curve with respect to mission-focused corporatism, right? So as millennials entered the workplace and now, you know, younger generations, the focus shifted away from just revenue to employees wanted to work at a place where they felt like they were contributing to the good of the world in some way, you know, whatever the mission of the business really needed to align with the mission of the person, right? Or at least have enough overlap to where their person would feel a sense of fulfillment. And so now you're saying things like that it's really important to help other people, to not dominate a meeting, let other people feel heard. I mean, these are characteristics that, you know, really probably, you know, for Gen X and boomers, these were not characteristics that were prominent in the workplace, right? It was simply merit and achieve the goals and move on to the next thing. So I think a lot of what you're talking about probably has to do with these younger people are now coming up into managerial roles. And as leaders, then you're seeing this kind of trickle down effect of, you know, people first, mission centric, doing good, a rising tide rises all ships, and whatever other analogies that I'm not coming up with, right? Like, so I feel like that's a big part of it. But you said something else, and I think will definitely, you know, be of interest to many people listening to this show. People coming out of college today are not getting jobs. And there's a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which is artificial intelligence. And I know a number of industries where you're never going to find a job anymore because AI can do it better than you. And we are not at this tipping point. You know, AI is a topic that's come up a couple of times. We've done episodes here over the years, last couple of years in particular. The general consensus is the machines aren't coming to kill us like in the Terminator anytime soon, but your skill sets are less critical than ever because large language models can do a lot of your tasks better than you. So for somebody coming out of college, is it more than just being a good listener, being a good teammate? What are the things that people who are trying to break into the market or trying to find a job in a new industry where they maybe don't have as much experience as the next person, what advice does your book give that person?
So what's really important is to take a look at the development. So with AI, for example, the job that I had no longer exists. And, you know, talk about who this affects. What about people who've been in a job for 20 or 30 years? And what are they going to do? You know, their job is gone. How do they support themselves? So it's important to take a look at what new industries are cropping up because of AI. I mean, there are a lot of people who say, oh, AI is changing things. You know, we're doing things differently. But there are opportunities to work with AI, to work with programming, but not as a programmer. AI does the programming, but it's a way of developing this new way of living in the world that requires this help, this help, this help. And so they have to go and learn what that is and figure out how to get trained in it.
Do you see with the clients that you work with because you work with some really big companies, you know, Fortune 100 companies. How are they pivoting with AI, and how is that affecting their employees?
So, for example, in the qualitative research industry, they're doing less of that. They're doing a lot less of it. And, you know, I experiment with AI. I've got three different AI companies that I work with, programs, and I play with them. I ask them questions. I ask them to ask me questions. And I ask them if they could create a focus group, for example, and what would they do? And they do it. So there have been a lot less projects in focus groups. So, in, you know, that's how I came into part of my work, is by doing focus groups. So I think that we're in a holding pattern in certain ways, that we have to be observing what's happening and where we need to go. We're at a pivot point. And I think we don't know exactly where the business world and where the work world is pivoting to. And at the same time, I think it's really critical to maintain our humanness and our compassion for other people. And the more we can help other people, the more we help ourselves. And I don't know if that's a good answer or not for that question, but I mean, that's what I've always thought anyway. It's part of what I believe in. I don't want to make money at somebody else's expense.
I think, Dr. Sharon, that's probably the only answer right now, because like you said, we don't actually know where this is going, but keeping our humanity seems to be crucial, because if we lose that, we lose everything. So it makes a lot of sense. So I want to go back to your book. You've given us, you know, some really good insights as to how the workplace has shifted. What are the things that matter now, really? What doesn't matter anymore? What are some other things that are in power dynamics that will be of value to the reader when they pick this book up?
I think that we need to understand silence. For example, some of the people that I work with, they just talk. And they don't realize that their anxiety through over-talking actually puts them in a bad position. So that this is a time in particular where we need to learn how to listen. Active listening, for example, you know, the way we do in therapy. But hearing other people, showing that you are supporting them, helping them with what they're afraid of. They're all afraid. Everybody's afraid, you know, in this climate. So I think that's a critical thing. And the idea of when to talk and when not to talk is critical, because if you are silent when you should have an opinion, that looks bad. And when you are talkative, when you're blurting out something that cuts off other people, that's a bad thing. So it's learning when to talk and when not to, how to manage the silence, how fast you talk. There are a couple of commentators that I like to listen to, and some of them talk like this. Blah, blah, blah. They talk so fast, it's actually hard to understand their point. And I hate that. You know, like, wait, what's wrong with it? Why is this person talking so fast that I can't even understand what they're saying? And so I think learning how to talk, learning how to present, and using your voice and your silence as a way of communicating confidence is really key to doing well in this industry, in this time. It's really about telling yourself that you know what you know, and that really, honestly, anything's possible. And, you know, you could be hit with something that you didn't expect, like all of a sudden a company closing down and not knowing what to do. But if you can maintain your belief in yourself and your way of talking to others to put them ahead of you, then they put you ahead of them. It becomes more of a community building than a one-on-one, and not a competition.
You've had the opportunity over the past several decades to interview 60,000 plus people. You obviously incorporated a lot of that research into this book that you've created. What was the most surprising thing about the data that you weren't expecting?
I mean, the most important thing, which won't be a surprise to you, is that what people say and what they do is not the same. And so even though I'm asking people to tell me about their experiences or likes and dislikes, very often it's not real. So I'll give you an example. I was running a series of interviews with psychiatrists on Abilify. Abilify was changing what it was for to include anxiety and depression. And in the back room was my Shih Tzu, along with one of my clients who loved this dog. He just loved this dog. And so we had done, I don't know, 15 or 18 out of 20 of these interviews. And the next psychiatrist was about to walk in. He said, "Sharon, why don't you take Stewie into the front room?" I said, "Oh, you're kidding." I said, "Well, you know, what if he blows the interview?" And he said, "Well, you know, we have plenty of them. It's no big deal. Do you want to try?" I said, "Okay." So I go to the door to invite the doctor in. And I say, "Doctor, I've got my little puppy here. And he's been whining a little bit. Would you mind if I brought him in?" "Oh, no, I love dogs." So I brought Stewie into the room. Stewie, I had all these papers that I was showing him. I had all different, you know, versions of information. And I had them on the floor in neat little piles. Stewie did this. He went right up to the pile and started digging in them. And so I had to pick him up and put him on my lap. I didn't say a word. I picked up the puppy and put him on my lap and continued the interview without interrupting. I just kept going. Stewie is a Shih Tzu. Shih Tzu snore. I mean, really a loud snore. Stewie is snoring through this hour-long interview. And then it stopped. And so at the end of the interview, I said, "So, doctor, I have a question for you." He said, "Sure." I said, "What was it like having the dog in the room?" I said, "Well, you know, I have to tell you, I know I'm supposed to tell you what I really think and feel. But I've been in this situation before where I found myself wanting to say what I thought they wanted me to say. And so I sometimes bent the truth a bit. But when I saw how you were with your dog, I realized that there was room for me to be myself." And I was like, whoa. And that was how that interview ended, which was, how do we give people permission to really say what they think and feel?
So you're talking about psychological safety, which in this instance was created by the dog.
And by the way that I dealt with the dog. It was that relationship. He was looking at a relationship and wondering how that affected our relationship.
Fantastic. Dr. Sharon, I've loved our time together today. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guest just a single question, and that is, what is your biggest helping? That one largest piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Things are changing. And the most important thing is to be flexible and to allow yourself to change in a way that's a win-win, good for you and good for the people around you. And see it as a challenge and an opportunity and an adventure. And if we can look at life as an adventure that we can work with, then it's a win-win for everyone.
Well said. The book is called Power Dynamics: How to Master the Hidden Forces That Shape Your Career. That book is available everywhere, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But if people want to learn more about you, Dr. Sharon, where can they find you online?
I have a website on Substack with lots of articles and information that they would like. So if you go to Substack, it's Career Power Dynamics, and you'll find me.
Perfect. And we'll link to that as well as link to the book. That'll be in the show notes for everybody at drrichardschuster.com. Well, Sharon, thank you so much for coming on today. I loved our conversation. It was wonderful having you with us.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And I want to thank each and every one of you as well. If you liked it, if you're excited, if you're going to go pick up this book, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping. Because the happiest people are those that help others.